You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night as he and a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others, will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. Tonight we have another very special guest on the show, another former ECU Pirate that I had the privilege and honor to coach, Big Ed Watkins, former ECU Pirate, famed NASCAR Jackman and Gas Man, and now current owner of Ed Watkins Marine. Welcome to the show, Big Ed.
Coach, it's an absolute pleasure. It's an absolute honor. You've been a mentor of mine for my entire life, my entire adulthood. And I can't thank you enough for everything that you instilled in me in the mid-90s. Everything that you did, from the mental toughness to those damn 110s and those 300s. I love you, Coach.
Well, I appreciate it. I enjoyed every moment of it. So, Ed, what I want to talk to you a little bit about first is just a few characteristics that you've pretty much had through your whole life, I'm sure, but ones that were very beneficial to you through your collegiate career that anyone who knew you was very much aware of. And then I'm sure those characteristics helped to carry you through your career with NASCAR and actually what you're doing now. But I always thought of you as a model of enthusiasm and positive spirit, an extremely loyal young man to the program and a loyal teammate, very hard worker every day, and then a great ambassador to the program while you were there and after you left. So those characteristics are very strong characteristics that contribute to a highly successful career, which you've had. So I want to compliment you on those and recognize you for those.
Coach, it's an honor, privilege, and I appreciate you very much. It's something that you instilled in us from day one, from the mental toughness, the mental fortitude, the chip on the shoulder that it took to be a Pirate. When you knew that we took the field, and when that fourth quarter came along, Coach, there was no questions in terms of who had the physical stamina, strength, and fortitude when the fourth quarter came around than us. And it was from the year-long dedication and the year-long commitment that we had with you, from the in-season workouts, you know, those Sundays after we'd win a big game, we'd beat Miami at Miami on ESPN and Orange Bowl Stadium. And Miami had just come off that big win against Florida State. You know, they're ranked top five in the country. And we just went right down to Orange Bowl Stadium and smacked them right in their ass. But you know what, Coach? We were on the practice fields that Sunday morning running those 300s, getting that daggum lactose out of our systems, running those 300s. I love it. I absolutely love it. There's nothing better than being an ECU Pirate in the 90s. It was because of you, Coach C. I love you, brother. You were the absolute fortitude of what made East Carolina University what it was. And we're the giant killers. And we were the giant killers because of you. And we appreciate you.
Well, I certainly appreciate all that. And, you know, when we ran those 300s on Sunday, the lactic acid had been long gone. But what people don't realize is I was trying to actually produce moderate lactate in that. That basically, of course, helped circulation and repair the micro tears in the muscle. It was a great warm up. Our times weren't particularly fast. And it also served to actually promote growth hormones. So those were the reasons that I did that. Just wanted to clarify that.
Coach C, I tell you what.
Lactose is a form of milk, I believe, right?
Hey, listen to me now. Coach C, we'd come back from that big top 25 win on ESPN highlights. It was in every sports bar in America. And I tell you what, I don't want a damn rag on the offensive lineman there in the mid-90s. But I think we all had a sensation of Bush Light and Beast Light coming out of our pores. And there was nothing better than daggone hammering those 300s and flushing your system out after an all-night celebration of winning and beating and taking those Power Five teams down. You look back at East Carolina, you look back in your coaching days, Coach Connors, and look at the amount of Power Five schools we took down, we competed with, and we beat. And that's what put us into that category of being giant killers. And it was because of the year-round conditioning, everything we spoke of those Sunday morning 300s. But you think about, you know, on Tuesday we had the gassers. And then we had the winter conditioning in the off-season.
Yeah.
And oh, my God. I've never in my life have I thought of a 55-gallon Rubbermaid trash can as I have. When I see one to this day, I still think of you and the entire physical conditioning program of winter conditioning at East Carolina University. And I respected that 55-gallon trash can, and I vowed I would never come in contact with one, and I never did, but I saw a lot of my teammates bow over on one of those. And then you go through spring conditioning and then summer conditioning. We had the 110s and the 16 110s, and holy smokes, Coach. We, like I said, we started to show off, Coach. When we got into the fourth quarter, we knew there was no, if it was Miami, Virginia Tech, South Carolina, good Lord, look at all those top five schools that we were talking about in the Power Five. If we knew we were in the fourth quarter, those schools were not going to be any more prepared than we were because of you.
Well, I always appreciated the hard work, the attitude, the leadership of those teams. We talk about that 10 years so much. I mean, it's the reason we talk about it is because we average five Power Five schools at least on the schedule, like almost every year. And, you know, and that was it was a giant killer chip on your shoulder mentality at ECU, something I really related well to. And you guys bought into whatever I threw out there for you. And, you know, we played during that 10-year period that I was there, we played 51 Power Five schools and we won 26 of those games. So, wow. You know, when the Pirates rolled out there, you could count on them winning half of those games. And you know, I thought that was, you know, a tremendous characteristic for the program. And when you look at the resources that we had and the fact that, you know, we brought in a lot of two-star guys, maybe a few three-star guys here and there. And we had to basically find a way to put a few more stars on those guys by the time we rolled out there, you know. So, you know. The training was extremely important. What I want to talk to you a little bit about, Ed, is I'd love to know more about young Ed Watkins. A little bit about your hometown, the influences in your life, your high school athletic career, you know, how you ended up at ECU. And a big part of this show, Ed, is as you've No, I think you realize is I'm trying to highlight a testimony of faith every time that I can with everyone that I've had on this show. Overcoming adversity through faith, anything like that that you experienced growing up, love to hear about that. But love to hear more about young Ed.
Well, Coach, young Ed, I tell you what, he was a seemed like he was a hardworking but not accomplishing individual. School was always tough. And for everything that had to get done, it seemed like the young Ed had to work 10 times harder than his peers. And that was a huge, tremendous disadvantage at the time. But looking back at it, it really instilled a hard work value. It really did. It instilled a lot of made me humble, made me appreciative, and made me hungry. And from high school of playing baseball, basketball, and football, and excelling in all three sports, I always knew football was my bread and butter. I love the game of football. There's nothing better than high school football Friday night when you got those bands, you got that sound, you got that smell in the air, and then when you're in the locker room and you cinch that chin strap up, Coach, you know, there's just no feeling any better than high school football Friday night. And I tried to do my best and represent a struggling high school, a high school that got very little exposure. It was a baseball school, in all honesty. We made it to the state championships every year in baseball, but when it came to football, we just didn't have the team. And that basically took me to a year in West Virginia through basic, you know, struggles in high school. I had to go to a school in West Virginia and basically gained that exposure, got that exposure that I did not have in high school, got that exposure playing defensive line in Concord College up in Athens, West Virginia. And I always had that East Carolina University. I had always had ECU circled on my perspective, on my periscope. And one thing led to the next. I ended up at ECU after a really, really good year of freshman football at a D2 school that I spoke of, Concord College. Ended up at ECU and walked in, God, 1st of June. My first day in the weight room, I opened the door and I looked around and I said, holy smokes. I said, these guys ain't too bad. But I love the excitement of that strength coach. And let me tell you about that strength coach that I met at ECU. The very first minute, the very first second of the time, he was a daggone fired up, absolute tenacious individual that left all his emotions on the line. He wouldn't let anybody cut corners. He wouldn't let anybody show up late. And I absolutely valued his transparency 100%. And from the very first minute, the very first second, the time I walked into the weight room at East Carolina University in 1994, Coach, you fell into my heart. I valued your values and I valued you very much. And you're a huge part, not only is my number one mentor in life, but you've become a huge part in terms of my stamina in life. And that was 1994, the very first second of the day I walked into the weight room at ECU was June of 94. And from that point on, I knew I was going to lay my heart out, my soul out. And I knew that you were going to take us to areas that people just didn't expect to be able to take them. I said, Coach Connors is the man that can take a two-star athlete and make them into a four-star athlete that can just make it happen and always just do the right things right. And that's what we did. And next thing I know, I'm in my final destination of making it to East Carolina University, being a Pirate and being a part of the ECU football program, and could not think of a better place to be that ECU in the 1990s. Unreal.
Well, again, Ed, much appreciated. And I don't know if you I don't know if you remember, but you know, I played at Salem, West Virginia, and by the time you got there, I don't think Salem was in the conference. But you know, I played in that conference where you played. We played Shepherd, we Concord. Yep. And I played at Concord a couple times. And so, you know, the WVIAC was some really good football. And yeah. We had, you know, a few guys that, of course, got drafted off of my team when I was there. We had kind of like a lot of transfer renegades to my school. But I really enjoyed playing in that conference, and Concord always had a good football team. Very familiar with that. So, you know, your experience at ECU, obviously, for both of us, included some of the best all-time, you know, wins there. And, you know, how do you think that you're, beyond your experience with me, how do you think your experience there strengthened you, I guess, strengthened the person that you already were? What are some of your experiences there, and, you know, some of the other people that you were that influenced you, and some of the, maybe the friendships that you made? How did that influence you and help you in the future?
Well, I tell you what, Coach, it's couldn't have had a better place to be. Couldn't have had a better coaching staff. Couldn't have any more appreciation to you and to what you have done and what you did for the program. But good Lord, you know, we speak of those. Once we got to ECU, baby, it was game on. It was game on. I knew I was at the place that I wanted to be. I had home in my heart, and I had daggone freaking intestinal fortitude looking forward to me. Every day I would see you. You would light my ass up, and you'd get me to the promised land. And you carry, you know, Jamie Gray, Ronnie Suttis, Shane McPherson, Danny Moore. You would piggyback those guys and carry them, and we did stadiums. We did stadiums during the summertime, and you carried them guys to the very top of the stadium, and your quads were blowing up, but you still had more to go. And every time – it was just unreal. From year round, I wouldn't have had a better place to be. From in-season, off-season, spring conditioning, spring football to summer conditioning, it by far was the most incredible experience I ever had in my life, was being a football player at East Carolina University. It was because of you, and the success and the wins that we had was because of you. But a lot of that gets instilled into you. You're a very impressionable person when you're in your early 20s. And you learn how quick, you know, mental fortitude, mental toughness. Coach, if I go onto Wikipedia right now and I was to type in on Wikipedia, mental toughness, Coach Connors, Coach C would be at the highlight of the definition of mental toughness on Wikipedia. And I love you for that, Coach, because you made things happen. You made small people be large. You made weak become strong. And not only did it pertain and win and gain its value in terms of the years of being at ECU, but it also instilled that in lifetime accomplishments for every player that you touched. Every player that you touched, Coach, you have left a lasting lifetime accomplishment on. And I'm one of them. And I can't thank you enough, but it's through those values and all that that you encompassed on us that allows me to win in life, win in the business world, and more specifically, win in the boating industry is being a giant killer. I've come in my first 7 years. I bought a small boat dealership that had one boat brand and one engine brand. And within 7 years, I've got a multi-location 8 boat brand business representing Suzuki, Mercury, Yamaha, C-Pro boats, Stingray boats, G3 Suncatcher pontoons, Vexus, Ranger boats. We're representing the very best boat brands on the water in just 7 years at a multi-location facility. We have tripled in revenue sales. I've got employees that, we're a 20 plus employee facility, and we're growing. We're growing positively, and we're growing by doing the right things right, and everything, my core values of my business life, my business perspective has come from those early days at ECU. And it's hard to believe that business decisions can come from running 300s. It's hard to believe that business decisions can come from running 110s, but it's the mental toughness, the mental fortitude, and that winning tradition that was instilled in us in an early time that allows that to happen, Coach. And I couldn't thank you enough.
Well, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be able to coach at ECU. And during both times I was there, but Henry Van Sant, one of our administrators way back when, who I really respected a lot, he once told me, we're stewards of this place. It'll be here a lot longer than us. And that's the truth. So we contribute what we can to the future of the program, the tradition of the program, and also the culture of the program, which, when new coaches come in, they always talk about changing the culture. And my thing with ECU was, if we weren't successful for a number of years, here and there, then, you can bring in a new regime, but you might have to recapture the culture. But I don't think you really have to change the culture and change the tradition of ECU, because it's very deep. And I always appreciated that, and appreciated the opportunity to coach every day that I was here. And I also very much appreciated the head coaches that I worked for, whether they were some of them were highly successful, and one of them wasn't greatly successful. But when you're in the Division One in Division One athletics. Sometimes, things don't go exactly the way you planned them at times. And, that happens across the country. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about your experience with NASCAR. Of course, I don't know a whole lot about NASCAR, but Walter Williams took me to Rockingham one time. I always loved Walter. He's a huge ECU. Basically kind of built athletics at ECU, really. So I was there, and I came down in the beginning where all the noise was. And then I guess, we sat up in the VIP place the rest of the race. And I was trying to understand it a little bit, but you had started as a jackman. A guy named Ray Evernham got you into it. You, the way that it's explained is you started to knock on doors, which didn't surprise me, and say, "Hey, I'm here. I want to be a jackman. I'll be the best jackman you ever saw in your life. And who wants me?"
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's kind of how it went.
That's right. You want some, come and get some. That's exactly right, Coach. Yeah, it started in 1997. My eligibility for football had come to completion, and I don't know. I'm big on visual check marks, and in my life, I had college football, and I had NASCAR pit crew. And daggone if I didn't have the boating industry. Those three things I had as check marks in my life since I was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
And couldn't have had a better experience. Couldn't have had a better coaching staff. Couldn't have had a better winning opportunity than we did at ECU, Coach. And, you know, as you know, one chapter closes, another chapter opens.
Right.
And the NASCAR chapter became, and holy smokes, now it was game on. It was game on, baby. Look out, because Big Ed is heading to NASCAR. This is something I wanted to do. This was something I wanted to do for a long time. My God, I'm going to dang on getting in NASCAR and rock and roll. In 1997, I just started basically knocking on doors and went from door to door to door. I can remember all the race shops and all the race teams that I went to. You know, as you can imagine, being a young strength coach, all the door knocking you had to do, Coach C, in terms of what you had to do to be able to find a home. And I was Big Ed, and I wanted to go find a home in NASCAR. And I started off with the top man. I started off with the big man. I started off with the most winningest team in all of NASCAR, Hendrick Motorsports, the number 24 DuPont car, Jeff Gordon and Ray Evernham. Ray Evernham was his crew chief. And I went straight there. And I started knocking on his door. And his door didn't answer. Lo and behold, he was out in the holler running a chassis dyno, or excuse me, running a shock dyno on a set of shocks. And I went into the holler, went into the truck, and I said, Mr. Neverham, I said, my name's Ed Watkins. I just finished up football at East Carolina University. I want to be part of your pit crew program. And he swung around and looked at me. He said, son, he said, Mr. Neverham is my dad, but you can call me Ray. And I said, all right. I said, we got something going on here. And from that point on, he started judging me, gauging me, feeling me out, pre-qualifying me. And I must have hit all the criteria that he was looking for, because he invited me back for pit practice, which was the next day. Problem is, I was still at ECU. My football eligibility had finished. And I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's 4 hours, almost 4 hours of time between Charlotte to Greenville, and then 4 hours from Greenville back to Charlotte. So I ended up sleeping in my Ford Bronco that night at Hendrick Motorsports, just so I could follow back up with him and the pit crew coach. And one thing led to the other. They started their, what they called was basically, a lot of you guys know, is the Rainbow Warriors. And yeah. I was one of the first members of the Rainbow Warriors and Jeff Gordon's pit crew. I started in 1997, and I couldn't thank Ray Evernham enough. Ray Evernham, a lot like you, Coach, had a lot of incredible things that he possessed and a lot of qualities that I really, really liked. And I'm a very loyal individual, and I tell you, once I get hold of somebody that I like, look out, because I'm like a damn big old bulldog, man. I'm freaking right on you. I'm white on rice. I'm your shadow. Once I like you, you ain't getting rid of me. You can damn kick me, you can slap me, but if I like you, I'm right there on you. And that's the way it was. So from Coach Connors at ECU, I went right into Ray Evernham in NASCAR with Jeff Gordon. And God, mighty son, we ended up winning an ungodly amount of races in 1997, 1998. I was part of the backup crew with him, went in to become part of his main crew there in the late 90s on the 24 car, and then transitioned. All of a sudden, you know, Ray became such a focal point of winning and such a focal point of success. Dodge came on board and they cherry picked Ray to lead the Dodge Manufacturers Association into NASCAR. And I was personally asked by Ray Evernham to be a part of his race team when he started Evernham Motorsports with the Dodge Dealers, UAW Dodge with, golly, Bill Elliott, Casey Atwood, Jeremy Mayfield, Casey Kane, and ran for that for about 10 years and started his pit crews. I was able to be a part of the very first hire for his pit crew, and not only be a very first hire for his pit crew, but also assemble and oversee the development of the entire pit crew for Evernham Motorsports and be a part of that operation and see it become, you know, the staple of what it became. And next thing I know, good Lord, that was 1997, and 25 years later, I was on a top-tier, fully funded, championship-capable winning team every year, and there is not an absolute soul on pit road that can say that they competed in NASCAR's highest level for 25 years on a championship caliber team. So I started in 97 with Jeff Gordon, and I finished up with Denny Hamlin in the late, in 22. It was Michael Jordan on his team, and every year of those 25 years, good Lord, 54 NASCAR Cup wins, 54 NASCAR Cup wins, 3 Daytona 500s, and 3 championships. And to this day, there's no one that can walk on pit road with accolades of what I accomplished, and I hold that very near and dear to my heart. But it all came from hard work, and it all came from the values and the buy-in that you taught us in the 1990s at East Carolina University, Coach. And that's another reason why I love you, brother.
Well, you had a great career, and I do love that story about how you went knocking on doors, because I was at Bucknell getting my master's degree, and I was coaching, and, you know, I went down to the Philadelphia Eagles and started knocking on their door, and, you know, I got to know Ronnie Jones, the strength coach there. He thought I was about half crazy. You know, he didn't know me from Adam. I had called him first and asked him if I could come down. He had to go, go meet with Buddy Ryan. So I about tore his office apart just trying to find out what he had in there. But he told me, hey, whatever you want to see, go ahead and open some drawers and start looking and so forth. And, yeah, that's kind of how I got into it, because Ronnie was friends with Steve Logan, and that's how I ended up at East Carolina. But if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have ever been at East Carolina, you know, so that's what you got to do, man. You got to go get it.
And, hey, Coach, if they don't open, just kick them in, big dog.
That's right. Kick them in, man.
Kick them in, brother.
So proud of you for doing that. And great example for anybody out there that wants to be successful. You know, you got to go get it, man. So you also was with Martin Truex Jr., right?
Yes, sir. 2017. Martin Truex Jr. on the number 78 Bass Pro Shop Toyota. And good Lord, son, we ended up winning like 10, 11 races that year. 19 to 20 stage wins. I tell you what, Coach, we'd show up at the racetrack. We were the hottest damn thing known to mankind. We show up, we'd sit on the pole, we'd lead every damn lap of the race, and we'd win that son of a bitch. And we just terrorized the 2017 season, won the championship that year, kicked ass, and had a damn good time doing it.
All right, so, you know, when you won the Daytona 500.
Yep. We won that on fuel mileage thanks to the damn gas man that the number 11 car had that year.
Love it, man. Love it. How many people were in the stands?
253,948. Top TV ratings on the biggest damn Fox broadcast of all time. And there's Big Ed in the damn infield holding the damn race-winning driver in his shoulder because he done won that sumbitch on fuel mileage.
Love it, man. Love it. Can't imagine 250,000 people in the stadium. I mean,
oh, it was wide open, baby. It was wide open. Brother.
That's awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah, congratulations again on that. So, you know, I coached in three bowl games in Charlotte when I was in Carolina. Two Meineke Bowls. And I don't even know what the other one was called. Car Quest.
I was there for every one, Coach.
Gotcha. And
I was supporting you.
Well, I appreciate that. Even though I was at that other place.
Yes.
So.
But we love you.
One of the activities was you could get in one of those cars with one of the drivers and go around the track three times. I only did it one time because that was enough experience for me to go 180 miles an hour, 2 feet from the wall. I said, yeah, I get it. But let me tell you something. I learned, you know, I gained an unbelievable level of respect for those guys. I have no clue how you could do that for as long as they do it. I mean, how do you even train for that? I mean, how do you get used to going that fast for that long and focus that hard for that long?
Well, that's the easy part.
Okay.
The hard part's on pit road.
I got you.
When you got, listen to me, Coach. When you're up on pit road, and you know, when I started, we didn't have helmets. We barely had fire suits. But you would get up on that wall, the Daytona 500. That'd be 200,000 people in the grandstands. It'd be the most viewed TV audience of the entire racing season on TV. We'd have CBS watching. And you knew nothing like standing up on a wall and all of a sudden that big TV camera comes right in front of you. And all of a sudden you see 200,000 people in front of you, 100,000 people behind you. That was just NASCAR's prime. That was back in the days when build a grandstand, they would come. You had Dale Earnhardt, Sterling Marlin, Darrell Walsh. You had them all. You had the greatest ones, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin. And all of a sudden, that was when pit road opened back then, was when the real dogfight started. Next, all of a sudden you'd come down, you'd get up on that wall, and that them cars would start coming down on pit road, and it'd be like a cold chill. It'd be like, holy smokes, here we go, baby. It's game on, brother. You had 43 cars coming at you at interstate highway speed. The national broadcast stations, the CBS, ESPN, Fox, had their big boom cameras in front of you. And you knew it was game on, big boy. You knew it was game on. And them cars come in, you could see the brake rotors glowing cherry red. And back then, we didn't have all them sissy rules that they have nowadays. Back then, you would have to be basically on an island fitting for yourself. So as a jackman back in the early 2000s, I'd have to lay my tire out on pit road so Rusty Wallace or Martin wouldn't run me over. But it was unreal, you know, being a part of the, you know, 2001 Daytona 500. We were pitted beside Dale Earnhardt the very year where he went into turn three and turn four coming to the checkered flag, and he got right-reared by Sterling Marlin. I was right there in his pits, right beside him, watching all that happen as we were pitting for the number nine car. And I tell you what, Coach, back in the 2000s, the early 2000s in NASCAR, there was nothing any better than being a part of that program. It really was. And it was, we get it to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Brickyard 400. You have 400,000 or 500,000 people. I never in my life have ever seen 400,000 or 500,000 people in one place, but you would there at Bristol Motor Speedway. You'd have 165,000 people in Bristol Motor Speedway. And if you didn't have a basically a ticket that was inherited from you to be able to get in. You weren't getting to that place. There was an absolutely untouchable feeling to be a part of being in Bristol Motor Speedway and being a part of those races in the early 2000s. It was an honor, a privilege. It's unreal to be a part of that. It really was.
Gotcha, man. Sounds like an incredible experience. You got my heart rate up just talking about it, brother.
Interstate highway speeds. We got race cars coming at you at 60 miles an hour. Dale Earnhardt, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, Dale Earnhardt. And I tell you what, man, it was a dogfight there on pit road. It was an absolute dogfight. And back then, those guys, you know, all of us back then, we had freaking clout on pit road. When you survived and you made years on pit road, you developed clout because it was earned. It was a blast.
Yeah. Well, I also wanted to, mention the fact that I would have people from NASCAR come to my office a couple times a year recruiting folks, recruiting athletes for, you know, gas man, jack man, whatever the other positions are that required some physicality, you know, that required some strength, of course, and some of the same attributes that football players have, size and strength. And so I'm assuming that there were a lot of parallels there with regard to practice and execution in minimal time, the competitive spirit, the team concept and having a game plan. And then, you know, also the physical preparation where, you know, you still probably had to be in the weight room and had to be in some kind of shape to be able to do this, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I tell you what, from my days at ECU with Coach Connors, when I had to go on pit road and perform, and then I had to perform in a weight room, it was nothing compared to what I had going on and all the mental fortitude, mental toughness that you'd established throughout all those years. But I'm telling you, there's nothing more humbling than being on pit wall in the Daytona 500 and CBS is covering it, and you've got live cameras in front of you. The cars are coming down at you at interstate highway speeds, and you're going to basically determine the outcome of this race. And for 25 years, I put my driver out front every time I had that opportunity to make a definite decision and a definite program of positive movement on pit road, and we won every time. We won with the Daytona 500 with Denny Hamlin multiple times. We won with ungodly amounts of fuel mileage races with Denny Hamlin at Pocono because I was able to get more fuel in the car faster than anybody else on pit road. And it comes down to who is going to stay late, who's going to be in that race shop, and who's going to work harder than anybody else to make yourself perform on Sunday afternoon? And that was me in my position. And that's where I took that old school feeling of when I was always in elementary school, always having to work harder to just perform to my colleagues. Well, I took it in NASCAR to being able to work harder and excel. And it worked out really well for 25 years. And my God, you got three Daytona 500s, three Daytona 500s, three championships and 54 cup wins. And good Lord, I couldn't have left anything else on the table back then.
Now, when the young guys came in and started with those positions, did you have an opportunity to coach them? Did you have an opportunity to train them? Did you do a lot of that?
You did, and I did, because you spoke on that a lot. I was the groundbreaker of the college football player going in NASCAR.
Yeah.
And through my success and what I was able to do basically opened the door for the college recruiting that you started having, where you had these NASCAR teams coming to college strength coaches and colleges recruiting people because they saw how valuable and how successful when you had someone that was geared for pit crew, how good that would be for a race team. And that's basically where it became, was from the late 90s, you had your mechanics and your guys that were geared just for the race car, and you had your specialty guys just geared for pit crew stuff. And that's where I came into, was the late 90s, and then all of a sudden just took off from that point on to the success of, holy shit, look at what Big Ed's doing on pit road. I've got to get more of him. And next thing you know, you got Hendrick Motorsports, Joe Gibbs Racing, Roush Racing, Penske going to every major college in America looking for more Big Eds because I kicked their ass and I freaking made it happen for 25 years. In 25 years, holy smokes, look at the damn accolades, accomplishments, the wins, the championships, the Daytona 500s. Good Lord. It was a damn dream come true, Coach. I love it, baby.
Now, our good buddy Jeff Carr did pretty well, too, in NASCAR, right?
Jeff Carr is my damn boy. Big Wood. Big Wood's the way we referred to him in the late 90s. I was a senior at ECU. And Jeff Carr / Big Wood came on as a freshman from China Grove, North Carolina. And Coach, we'd have those walkthrough times. And those walkthrough times were very valuable. But we still have our helmets on, but we wouldn't have any pads. And those walkthrough times were valuable because it gave you a chance to get reps, but you weren't hitting. Yeah. The next thing you know, had this young boy, Jeff Carr, from China Grove, North Carolina, that all of a sudden strapped it up. And on those walkthroughs, all of a sudden set hut, boom! He'd blow you up. He would blow you up. He did not know the meaning of half speed. And next thing you know, I was snapping the ball, and this boy was coming at me at 100%, 100% wide ass open. Bam! Smacking me right in the face mask. And I was like, damn! I was like, this boy's bringing the wood. And from that point on, that's when we ended up nicknaming him Wood. Yeah. Because he brought the wood every time. If it was just walkthroughs or full tilt, he was bringing the wood. I've never met an individual, Coach C. To this day, me and Jeff Carr, we embrace, we fish, we just bond. And to this day, I see those gouges underneath his eyebrow from his very first year, his freshman year at ECU, from when he was just bringing the wood every time. We'd be half throttle just in walkthroughs, but you'd snap that ball, and he would just bring it 100% and just light you up. But Jeff did a tremendous job in NASCAR. He was a jackman. He made me proud. He was one of my mentors. He was one of my boys. He was a few years younger than me, and he freaking lit it up. He did a fantastic job. I love the guy. Good Lord, what the impact that he did for ECU football.
Yeah.
And for NASCAR. But, God, you talking about somebody that brought it every time, every snap. Led with his head and just brought it, brought the intensity, brought the power every time. I love that guy.
Absolutely. Yeah, he definitely one of the most physical players that I had the opportunity to coach, and still talk to Jeff quite a bit myself. He's got some kids now that are doing very well athletically also. So, you know, and I had he and his wife, of course, Misty, on the podcast as well. And that was a great one.
Fantastic. Great combination.
Yeah, so, you know, tell me a little bit about the type of boats that you sell. You know, I don't know anything. I don't know much about boats. I know everybody says, hey, boat, break out another 1,000. I'll use somebody else's, you know, because it's so expensive to have a boat. But I have had some experiences when I was coaching in Florida. I had the Nicholas kids in school, and they had a big fishing boat. We went out, caught a big marlin one day. I was catching bonita, and I thought the bonita were really, you know, they would fight you, and they were big fish. And then we started using them for bait. So, you know, I got some learning experiences down there in the ocean when I was, coaching high school in Florida a long time ago. But I don't like those 7-foot seas at all. So I like the intercoastal. So, you know, the boat I like is that little 2-seater teakwood boat. My wife likes that. I said, man, well, let's get one of those. Then I found out they cost about $100,000 for a little teakwood boat, right?
Coach C, I got a boat for you, big man. I tell you what, don't you worry one bit. I'm guaranteed to put a smile on your face.
All right.
There's nothing better than being on the water.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, you go onto my website, edwatkinsmarine.com. We got 7 of the nation's leading boat builders. We got the very best center consoles. We got the very best pontoons. We got the very best bay boats, center consoles, bass boats, fishing boats, you name it.
Yeah.
With the very best engines on the back of it. New, used. I've got like over 130 boats in stock at 2 locations. It's nothing better than being on the water. You're an Emerald Isle guy. You're in Atlantic Beach, Morehead City.
I got a house at Emerald Isle.
Yep. There's nothing better than being at Emerald Isle. Atlantic Beach, that Morehead City area. Especially this time of the year when the fish bite is on. Then to be on the water when that sun is rising, when that sun is coming across that Atlantic Ocean, and you've got your own personal bay boat, center console, what have you, and you're going out, say, let's go out of Morehead City. We're going to go out of Morehead City. And we're running out past through there. We're going past the knuckle. We're headed towards, let's head out towards, good Lord, the ocean front of everything that's out there. And man, I tell you what, Coach C, it's with, look on our website between the C-Pro 273, the C-Pro 269, the 259, the 320, that market is absolutely took off.
Yeah.
And it's unreal when that sun's coming up and you're headed out of Morehead City, headed out towards the ocean. And, you know, there's all kinds of markers out there. There's all kinds of shipwrecks out there. But just running up and down the intercoastal waterway, it's that saltwater boat has really taken off.
Yeah.
The center console C-Pros have taken off. The Stingray saltwater boats have taken off. There's nothing better than having a boat that can be a family boat one day and a hardcore fishing boat the very next. And you know it better than I do. Those waters down where you're at Emerald Isle and Atlantic Beach and Morehead City. And good God almighty. There's a reason why Michael Jordan is bringing Catch 23, which is a 90-foot Viking, when he's bringing it into Morehead City to fish that big old offshore tournament there in the 1st of June. And good God, man, I'm telling you, I'll absolutely love it. There's nothing better than being on the water. We got everything from a 15-foot to a 34-foot fishing boat. We've got premier family pontoon boats, center consoles. It's just, there's no reason why not to own a boat nowadays. It really is. Between where I'm at in Lake Norman, We got multi-locations. We're on the East Coast, on the West Coast of Lake Norman, on the East Coast of Lake Norman. I'm down in your neck of the woods in Eastern North Carolina. I've even become a student at Carteret County Community College just to start their captain certification, just because I love Moorhead City so much, and I can't wait to breathe the salt air down when I'm down there. I love that salt air. I love the seagulls. I love Emerald Isle. I love Atlantic Beach. So I became a student at Carteret County Community College just to be able to get my daggum captain certification. I love it. So between Lake Norman, Eastern North Carolina, Big Ed is running hard. He's covering the real estate. And I love making Pirate Nation my home. I love making Pirate Nation the home for Ed Watkins Marine. I'll hand deliver any boat that you need. And I tell you what, Coach C, there's nothing better than being on the water on a center console bay boat or a deep V, because the fishing's wide open. Springtime is here. And there's nothing better than life and life on the water, baby. I love it.
Well, it's a couple things. You know, when I lived in Moorhead City, I had a house down there too when I was in Carolina. And went out with some friends occasionally in a boat. And, you know, you'd be running, there'd be about like 6-8 inches of water out there. And every once in a while, people get stuck on a sandbar. I'm like, man, I don't want no part of that. Because what's going to happen if I get stuck out here? So the depth of the water is something I would have to learn. And I never backed the boat into the water. I'm afraid I just backed my whole truck into the intercoastal. But I do have a Toyota Tundra TRD Pro, which is a pretty good truck to haul anything. But those would be the things that you would have to teach me, brother.
I'm going to teach you right now, Coach C. Put on your Toyota TRD. It's a very fine pickup truck. It can pull 90% of the boats that I have in stock right here at Ed Watkins Marine. Put your hand at 6 o'clock on the steering wheel. Here we go. 101 within 10 seconds or less. Put your hand on the steering wheel at 6 o'clock. If you need your boat to go left, you turn the steering wheel to go left. You need your boat to go right, you turn your steering wheel to go right. Always put your hand at the 6 o'clock position. That's your frame of reference. And from that point on, I'll get you dialed in with any boat that you need, Coach C.
I love it, man. I love it. Can't wait. Hey, Ed, we got to close it here soon. So tell me about your family, brother.
Hey, we're hanging. We're doing good. I got a daughter that's in eighth grade that's kicking butt in volleyball. It's doing a tremendous job. And she just won her team. She's on a travel ball team up here in Hickory, North Carolina. She just won the team last week on a big overhand slam on the top net. She did a fantastic job. I got a son that's a race car driver, and he's a lacrosse player, and he's a football player, and he loves it, baby. He's just staying hungry. He's in seventh grade. And they are growing hard, doing well, and I couldn't be any more proud of Avelyn Watkins, my daughter, and Ryan Watkins, my son. And life is good, brother. And life is good.
Well, that's really great to hear. And we're going to have to bring this session to a close here. But I can't wait to talk to you again. And I really want to get down to where that, one of those stores where you're selling those boats and take a look around a little bit.
Absolutely. And,
I got to get there one of these days.
All of Pirate Nation, baby. Come to me. Come to me. All of Pirate Nation. We got friends and family discount, and we got purple and gold discount. We name it from Charlotte, North Carolina, of Lake Norman to Emerald Isle, Atlantic Beach, Moorhead City, baby. We got all state of North Carolina covered. Love Pirate Nation. Love you, Coach C. Got you covered, big man.
I appreciate it, man. You keep looking around for that two-seater, that nice little wooden boat for me, brother. All right, great to have you on. We'll be talking sometime soon. Stay fired up, brother. Stay fired up. You have a happy Easter, and give your kids a hug for me.
Absolutely, Coach Connors. I love you. I appreciate you. Go Pirate Nation. I couldn't be any more privileged to be a part of the show.
Okay, take care. This is Jeff Connors signing off for Absolute Empowerment. We'll see you next week, and God bless. Thank you very much, Ed.